The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're entering the second phase of We the People Radio for this afternoon. Talking about wolves and the cost of them and the effect of them on cattle and ranchers and just all things in between.
Oh, yeah, there's much, much more cost involved with wolf kills than just the cost of the animal.
Yeah, people think it's just,
just
the animal died.
Pay them for the animal and we'll call it even.
Yeah, except for the fact that they don't really pay for all of them and, all the things that go with.
All the stuff that goes along
with. So we're here with John Williams, who is an associate professor, and I forget what the other thing was called. What was it called, John?
Just a county agent.
Oh, yeah, county agent. I guess I'm not familiar with that. And you're up at Oregon State University. And how long have you been studying this stuff, anyway?
Well, 2008 is when we started, to do actually work on the research. I've actually been working with the ranchers on what might be the issues since 1996. So,
holy cow! So it isn't like you just stumbled into this when wolves became popular.
Or unpopular.
Facetious, popular. How long have they been talking about it? Because this is relatively new for most of us, and most people, there are a lot of folks who don't even know it's already happening, that they're basically reintroducing wolves that never belonged in North America. So the idea that they're endangered is stupid on the face of it, but this has been a little pipe dream of the environmental community for a long time.
Well, whether these are the right wolves or not is a moot point in my mind. Now, I do realize
once they're here.
the people that wanted the wolves, worked diligently for decades to get them. And in 1996, they did get the wolf release in Montana and in Idaho. Oh, actually, in Wyoming and Idaho, and they were already coming into Montana, and they planted the Canadian gray wolves there, and there's a lot of debates. My county has lots of bumper stickers about the invaders from the north, the Canadian gray wolf, and yet my point is there is an awful lot of issues around wolves, and it's a horribly important issue. I unfortunately have to agree with Mac Birkmeyer, who's the rancher that came in 1996 and said this is going to be the biggest issue for livestock producers in his lifetime. And it has turned out to be that way, I believe. But it's the wolf that we're going to have for the rest of my life, probably most of your lives. And so, we can argue the point, but the way I am a little more pragmatic in the sense of that train left the station. It's what we have, right or wrong, and so we need to learn what we're dealing with and figure out the best way to make sure that everybody understands what the impact is, and then find ways to, I struggle to say mitigate because it's pretty difficult, but that's the effort.
Yeah, it's very difficult to mitigate, and at some point, make a mental note that we'd like to hear some of the deterrents, because a lot of the government deterrents are silly. I mean, they're just silly. Down here, they're talking about cans with rocks in them and little pieces of rags along your fence line, and I mean, you're talking, some of these cattle are in areas that stretches for hundreds of miles.
You're talking about fladry. They actually has a name for the little flags on the fence, and that's one of the deterrents that are there, and we can talk about that when you want to. So,
all right, well, we can go wherever you'd like to at this point.
Well, I guess I'd like to get to the economics, and we left off last time, and I was talking about, so when we find that a cow is agitated, and this recognize that These cows that we tested to show there was a temperament change hadn't been around wolves for months. And yet the impact is still there. Now, like any other being, critter, or human, non-human, when a traumatic event occurs, then you have some people who get over it and go back to work the next day, and you have some people who never get over it. And so we know that as time goes by, the trauma of an event with a cow might be reduced over time. Probably never goes completely away, but the impact is reduced. But the reality is the wolves are out there every year, and so there's reoccurring events. And so I tried to put a paper together that talks about, so what is the economics? Because everybody, like you had said, well, everybody says, well, ranchers get compensated for their losses. Well, they get compensated for a confirmed wolf kill. And remember, the confirmed kills are those that you first find the carcass, and out in the mountains, the research at Idaho says that you find one out of eight. If you're in close to home, if you're on private ground, if you're in areas where there isn't trees, that number will get a lot smaller. You know, you will find more and more and more of a percentage of them, but it's still not all of them. And we talked about a reduced conception rate, and I used a herd of 400 head to show as kind of an example. And if you lose 10% of your conception rate, if you go from a 95% conception rate to an 85% conception rate with 400 head of cows, that's 40 calves that you didn't have, that you didn't even have an opportunity to save. And the example I used is a little higher price than we had today. The cattle prices have dropped since June when I did this, but with a $2.40 calf, you know, that was $134 a head for every cow you owned, just due to the reduced conception rate because of the change in temperament and the demeanor of your cows.
Wow.
And of course, compare that to the depredations. With the average that we'd seen over in Idaho, out of 400 head, you might lose 15. And that's an average. The one rancher I was talking about, you know, his percentage was a little higher than that. But that's $50 a head for every cow that you own. So just the reduced conception rate is 2.5 times more than the depredation, and the depredation is really the only one that you would see compensation for. Another economic issue is weaning weight. Your calves just don't come in as heavy as they did because their mothers never seem to settle down. Research didn't show that they travel faster or further, but they just it's the downtime. You never see those cows laying in the shade chewing their cud, and that's when the weight gain occurs. So you have maybe 35 or 40 pound lighter calf, and that's another $46 per head, not just on those that are impacted, but every cow you own is a reduction of $46 or so. Then you have the increased expenses. Those were the reductions. And the first thing that we talk about is the ranchers tell us that the cows come in thinner in the fall than they used to without wolves. And they're coming in almost one body condition score lighter. And for those that aren't familiar with body condition score, We score the cows on how much fat they have and so forth. And if you can't see the ribs at all, that's probably a 6. And, you know, if they're still well covered and look nice, that's a 5. If you're seeing the ribs pretty prominently, you're down in the 4 range. And that means that your cows are too thin to calve healthy, in a healthy manner. We need them to be a body condition 5 when they start to calve. Around our neck of the woods, we start calving about the last week of February, maybe the the third week of February, for sure by the 1st of March. And that means those cows come in late fall and they're 90 pounds lighter than they're supposed to be. Which means during the winter, instead of just keeping your cow at the same weight, it means you've got to get her to gain a pound a day. And that's very expensive in the wintertime. And that's another $56 towards your expenses. And then there's just time. And this was one that the ranchers weren't expecting necessarily. But the amount of time that they had to spend when the wolves showed up. The first thing is all the time spent meeting with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and learning what all the rules were and what they could and couldn't do and how they could do it and what they were supposed to do if they found a dead carcass and so forth. Massive amount of I'd call it meeting time. But on top of that, you have additional fences. Wolves get to run in cows and they tear the fences down. Additional fence maintenance. You have a large additional amount of checking your cows. Grandpa used to take the cows out in the spring and arrange and turn them out and come back in the fall and gather them. Your dad probably went out, somewhere between once a month and once a week to check on them. And right now, before the wolves, our ranchers were somewhere between once and twice a week checking on the cows. Now they're 4 to 6 times a week out on the range checking. And you contemplate 50 miles to where your cows are grazing, and then it might be another hour up a pretty rough road to get there. That's just to get there, and then you got to have the checking time. It's a massive amount of additional time. And that's almost $92 a head of additional either hired help or rancher themselves management time because the wolves were in your herd. Then we had to kind of make an assumption somewhere, and we just made the assumption on this ranch that wolves were on the ranch where the cows were at year-round, 12 months a year. So that's kind of a worst-case scenario. But if you add it all up, the depredation, calf kills is $50. Reduced weaning weights is $46. The body condition score is $56. Reduced conception rates, $134. And the increased management's $92. $380 a head. And that's for every cow you own.
And what's a normal, what's that $380 out of normally? I know it's hard to say because they all weigh different
calf
things.
Would bring you normally about, with this price, with the $2.40 price and a 560-pound calf, which is what we have up in this country, that's a $1,344 calf, okay? But that doesn't take off all of your expenses yet. Doesn't take off your feeding costs and your range costs and your management costs, salt, doctoring, and all of those are the expenses that come off of that $1,300. So, you know, it's about 25% of the gross, which used to be return on investment and management, you know.
Well, I don't care what you're doing. You take 25% off. That is a gigantic bite. When we come back, I don't know how you're planning on doing this, but we definitely want to talk about the cost and the toll it takes on the people. Because
okay.
We've talked a lot about the animals, and that's a given, although I think folks don't realize how much that is. But there's a huge cost on the people who live in this country and who take care of all of our livestock. It's a tough deal. So we will come right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. I do hope that you'll go to the website. We've got a ton of good information on there. We are Sundays on the West Coast and Mondays on the East Coast. All that information's there. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped. To give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Well, we gave all the cows away, and now the only horns around here today are the ones up on the grill of a genuine 59 Coupe de Ville.
They're parking cars in the old beef patch. There's a bar in the barn and the place stays packed. Yeah. Till the cows come home at Cadillac Ranch.
That's what we should have called the show, Cadillac Ranch. Good theme song. Thanks, Bob.
The solution to the cow problem.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, John. So what's the cost to, I shouldn't limit it to monetary costs. I mean, what's the toll it takes on the people?
I can give you an experience just of what happened in Wallowa County, which is my home. When the wolves came here in 2010, it wasn't just the ranchers that were impacted. It was a cultural shift, and I would suggest that for approaching 2 years, all the coffee clutches, you know, the guys who meet at 10 o'clock in a restaurant and solve the problems of the world,
yeah,
or the ranchers who meet at 5 a.m. and have breakfast together before they go out. Or the people in the, you know, early afternoon, whichever. It was 100% of the topic was wolves. Every now and then, you know, something exciting would occur, but within a day, it was back to the impact of the wolves. And it's devastating. It's depressing. There was a depression, and I'm talking about a psychological type of depression in the whole community. And of course, we're a small towns. Our town's and biggest town in the county is 2,000, and we have a county of only 7,000. So it's a small, isolated communities, much like I traveled to MacArthur for the wolf presentation 1st of February back there. And, you know, it's a lot like the country I traveled through after I left Reading, so up in the northeast. And it was... it was impacting everybody. Then, of course, the ranchers were dealing with it as we've been talking about it. People are no longer feel safe to go out and let their kids play too far from the house, for example. And the young kids who've grown up either on ranches or like my kids with just 10 acres, we didn't worry about them. You got them home, and then they were out there somewhere as they were young kids, and they were outside, and they were healthy. And now mom has to be there. You can't send the cow dog like a lot of people. We used to put a lot of faith in our cow dogs that they could go with the kids, and if something happened, they would defend those kids.
Sure.
And because that was family, and. And then if something else happened, they would come home and tell you about it. And I mean, it may sound like Lassie, but it's the truth. You put a lot of faith in your good dogs. You can't do that anymore because a dog is an attractant to the wolves. There's only been, you know, two confirmed adult or wolf, human wolf attacks. One up in Canada where a young gentleman went out to look at a garbage dump in the middle of the winter, and the wolves had been frequenting there, and they attacked him and killed him. And the other was a young teacher up in an island up in Alaska that went out jogging by herself in the evening and got attacked. Those are confirmed. However many others are out there, I don't know. All I know is that when you are not allowed to protect your livestock, that was the feeling of despair. Even if you saw a wolf there, you legally weren't supposed to shoot it. That was as disarming as anything under these under the rules that we were living under. And that's one of the real keys to getting away from them being listed as an endangered species, is you begin to be able to take back the right to protect what's yours. And even though the rules aren't there in Oregon under phase two, under phase three, which is 7 breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years, and we're actually in our second year of that already, then we will be able to have a little bit more relaxed rules. Still very, very onerous, but it was just depressing. And one of the ranchers is that president of the, or chairman of the Wolf Committee for the Oregon Cattlemen's, told us, he says, you know, I used to look forward to the day I turned my cows out on the range. As you know, that's a major accomplishment. I've nurtured these cows, I've calved them, I've got them up out of the mud, and I've made sure they sucked, and I've got them healthy, and I've vaccinated them and branded them. And this is, you know, this is graduation day. I take my cows and my still small calves, and I take them out and put them on the range. And he said, I have such a feeling of accomplishment, knowing that the hardest part of the year is gone. And he says, now I turn my cows out with tears in my eyes, knowing that I'm sending some of those out to be eaten by wolves. And he said, it takes all the joy out of turning your cows out on the range. And that's that psychological loss of freedom that the ranchers are telling me about. So,
yeah. How do you put a price tag on that?
Well, and you also have people who can't, they have operations that are small enough, they can't afford to hire somebody to ride, you know, in the night to keep an eye on the cattle, and so they wind up doing it themselves. So you have a lot of these folks that are getting up there in years, and they're killing themselves to keep their cows alive.
Or they try, yes. And human presence is one of the deterrents that's used. You know, when we had our research, we had our collar on a wolf, and we had the collars on the cows, and we were hopes of having an interaction, you know, a few times to be able to learn something. And when we said, if it's going off once every 15 minutes on the wolf and every 5 minutes on the cow, if they get within 500 meters of each other, that's an interaction because they can move so quickly. And we were in hopes of capturing something. We had 783 times that the 10 cows and the one of the 10 cows and the wolf interacted at 500 meters. That, for those of us that are old and never did get the metric system, that's a football field and an end zone, is 100 meters, so five times that. And so we narrowed it down, and we said, let's talk about just when they got within 100 meters. And that was 53 times. And 52 of those times were at night. Now, like you said, well, we're out here trying to protect our animals in the evenings. Well, a day rider is one of the things that non-lethal money can be spent on. And I look at my data and I keep scratching my head saying, what's the value of a day rider? Because they're out there at night. They're a nocturnal moving animal. And our research also shows that on this one wolf data that we have. And so sometimes there's, you know, the research is struggling with what the norm is out there when people say, well, get them in close to your house. Our data didn't show that help. Get your day rider out there. Well, I come to find out from the ranchers in Willow County, they call him the mortician. He's looking for carcasses. He's not trying to stop, you know, movement. And so all of this effort, it takes its toll. And some of it you don't see for a couple of 3 years. People are hep up and they're doing it. And then they realize they have to do that the rest of their life, and it really starts to settle in.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's one thing if it's, you know, it's like drought or something else that happens that you know is limited. It's not going to last forever. This
right.
is like 900 miles of bad road.
There's a couple other things that, you know, you asked earlier about how's the coyote population different than wolf?
Hmm.
And that's a massive difference. We've had people who say, well, you've lived with coyotes, you've lived with bears, you've lived with cougars, you can live with the wolf. Well, not true. When we have a coyote problem, and if the population gets too high, we put in some traps, we get our neighbors out, we shoot them down, we get the population down in our local area of, say, you know, let's say a couple of thousand acres around you, and you've solved your coyote problem. But when you recognize that a wolf can travel up to 30 to 35 miles a day easily, our wolf averaged 11 miles a day and moved up to 28 miles in one day. We had a wolf who while the pups were in the den, traveled 30 miles in 6 hours.
Wow.
And his collar was set to go off every 6 hours, and And when the pups are in the den, they get fed by the males or all the other animals in the pack, go out, kill, eat, stuff themselves full, run back to the den as fast as they can, and upchuck that, and that's how the female and the pups eat for the first 6 weeks. And so here he was, he killed an elk, he gorged himself, his collar went off, and 6 hours later it went off at the den. So the scale of what you have to understand about wolves is so massively different. You really have to take a step back and say, when that wolf that's down there next to you guys, or the wolf that you have there, left our county, he was less than 2 weeks getting there, and then he stayed. And so a 500-mile walkabout on a wolf in a 2-week time frame is not out of line. So you got to change the scale, and that's also one of the frustrating things is you think you might be able to do something about it, but it's such a big picture. You know, even though you got that download from ODF&W this morning, he might be 20 miles from there or 30 miles from there by now.
Yeah.
Clear across the county.
They're not just, you know, for the people who are kind of still a little clueless about some of the wild animals. Wolves kill for three things, you know, to feed themselves. They kill for sport, and they also kill to teach their young. So there's a lot of killing, you know, a little extra killing than some other animals. Some other animals, you know, well, they're just trying to feed themselves. Well, not really.
Yeah,
there's a little
not always.
Nah, there's a little extra for these guys. We need to take a really quick break, and when we come back, talk to us a little bit about some of these goofy deterrents. Now that we've talked about things that actually work that are incredibly stressful, expensive, and often not available, the state and the environmental community has all sorts of nutty ideas we should let people know about. Be right back.
Big bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Tra la 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 la. Long ago there were three pigs, little handsome pigs. For the big bad, very big, very bad wolf, they did not give three figs. And number one was very gay, and he built his house with
can
hay.
Can you say that?
With a hay, hay, toot, he blew on a snoop, and he played
how politically incorrect
can
you get, Bob?
Now number two was fond of jigs, and so he
a snarky song about the tree
wolves. Barbara Streisand regrets that.
It's kind of funny we were talking about that.
I shall build my house with bricks. He had no chance to sing or dance, cause work and play don't mix.
We were just talking about that, the politically incorrect. Bill wanted to know if the collars had to be, you know, rainbow colored, or what were we going to do in California, you know, with the transgender wolves and all that.
Gender neutral colors.
We need gender neutral colors.
That's,
that was it.
Is, yeah,
these
California,
are the things that,
yeah.
This is the research that we're into.
In California.
John. this is the scrutiny we bring to the topic, so obviously we completely need you because we're so easily distracted. Not good. Okay, so talk about some of the deterrents that just make me crazy. Yeah,
what they call them. Okay. We usually talk about four or five different kinds. The first one is flattery, and you alluded to that. It's an electrical wire with red flags on it, and the flags are, about 16 inches apart, and maybe a foot long, and they blow in the wind. And you put those up around places where you have very, very, very tight control. So maybe in a close calving pen, if you have one on your ranch, more of a sheep operation, if you bring your sheep in at night and you're wanting to put that up around the outside. And if it can either be electrified or not electrified, so it's a one-strand electric wire, that works without being electrified. For when it works up to about 60 days. And they say if you electrify it, it might work for 90 days. And what I suspicion, and I've never been told this, but the people who propose to use this, they haven't told me whether if you use it for 60 days this winter, whether it gets a new 60 days next winter or not. What I have read and heard, it's my opinion that that is a tool. Like I said, very limited use around lambing, calving, where you're in on tight quarters, and for a limited amount of time. And while it's up, it works on some of the wolves all of the time. Now, this is my opinion. It works on some of the wolves some of the time, and on some of the wolves none of the time. So if you think it's going to solve the problem, it's not. But it's a tool that might allow you to, you know, to reduce some impact somewhere in very, very isolated situations. A second one is called a rag box. That's where they get a big toolbox, big plastic toolbox, and they put a flashing light on top of it and a couple of speakers out in front and hook it to an MP3 player inside, and they hook it to a receiver, and if one of the collared wolves gets close to this box, then it goes off. And they've got every sound known to man on this MP3 player that goes off. We're talking sirens, whistles, helicopters, chainsaws, shotguns, rap music.
Well, I bet that scares the hell out of them.
It's one of the most effective sounds to try to deter the wolf. What my producers have told me, and we have two of these in the county, is that it keeps them up at night because it goes off for almost any reason, and very seldom is there a wolf with a collar that actually sets it off.
Oh, great.
But wind will set it off, rain will set it off, you know, some sort of other sound or another animal. And so it tends to do a really good job of keeping the producer up and not real good on helping keep the wolves away.
Boy, so, people think we're mean to people in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
You know? If we did this kind of stuff to the folks in Guantanamo, we'd be in trouble. We'd have hearings in Congress.
So the third thing is the cleanup bone piles, and that actually works. You don't need an attractant around. You know, all ranches is the place you used to just drag your dead animals up far enough away from any human habitation that then the wildlife could take care of it and clean it up for you. And now that attracts the wolves into your neck of the woods. And even burying it, we buried ours the first when we first started, and they dug down through 18 inches of dirt to get to the bone piles that were old and leached. So that's something that you can do that helps, is quit having bone piles. And so what do you do with your dead carcasses? Our county commissioners opened up the dump to delivery of carcasses. Now, your dump has to be certified to take carcass. Ours was. The ranchers got it opened up. The producer, the commissioners, were more than happy to do that, and they didn't even pour salt in the wound. You know, you lose your $2,000 cow, and then they don't charge you an extra $25 to dump her. If you're coming in with a dead carcass, there's no charge to it. So that is something that you could do ahead of time, get a hold of your commissioners and find out if their dump is certified to take carcasses, and if not, maybe they should start working on it.
Well, it's interesting because, see, we don't have any landfills anymore.
And so what do you do with your garbage?
I think we're taking landfill stuff to Lake Nevada or something.
Okay.
I mean, it's obviously extremely cost efficient.
Sure, I would work with my commissioners on what I might do with my They may need to create a place where they collectively can put their carcasses. And in fact, there's quite a bit of research that shows how you can compost carcasses and break them down rather quickly. So, be another shot. Day Rider, I talked about a little earlier, and that's just basically called human presence, and human presence works. When you're there, the wolf will tend to not be there. It has no spatial and no temporal residual. And so if you're there, and I don't know how far away it will deter a wolf, but not real far. Let's say somewhere between a quarter and a half a mile, it might keep that wolf back. But if you're sitting out there protecting your livestock and you drink coffee and then you have to go get rid of your coffee, there's no residual for that 5 minutes you're gone. They may well come in and attack in a five-minute time frame. And of course, distance-wise, you're not very far out. And on open range, obviously, that doesn't work. We were successful 1 year to move the wolves off of our producers that had been being hit hard. And we spent quite a bit of money with the riders, and we moved the wolves. And at MacArthur, there was a non-lethal discussion about a group up in Montana that was successfully not having wolf kills by the human presence process and mob grazing and so forth. And I asked the researcher afterwards, and I said, what about the neighboring ranches or the ranches around there? And he said, we've been checking, and there isn't any effect on those. And I said, how far are you checking? And he said, well, next door. And I said, well, we were successful in moving our wolves one summer, and then they came back in the fall with the human presence, but we moved them 100 miles away.
Now, how did you move them? Using those techniques?
Using having people out there always protecting our livestock in that, let's say, 10,000 or 20,000 acre area.
Okay.
And the wolves just decided that they were, harassed enough that they went over the hill.
Right.
90 miles away, and the rancher over there got the same number of kills as we did here. So the reality is we spent a lot of public money moving who got hit that summer. We didn't stop the kills. We just changed who got hurt.
See, and
that's the sad part, is those wolves are going to eat every day. And then the other thing, the other non-lethal that we talk about is management changes. If there's a den in your pasture, don't turn your cows out there, but that's a cost to it. Then I have to go rent pasture somewhere else and things like that. So those are the non-lethal.
Let's come back and do the other ones after we take one last quick break. Yeah, a lot of these are not really all that cost efficient, I think, as people are finding out, and they're not always, they don't always work. Anyway, we'll be right back with John Williams. We're talking about wolves today on We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
catch you in the park walking in the dark. That's for you, Bill.
Yikes.
Todd Rundgren's tribute to Wolfman Jack.
Classic. Yeah, I remember when Wolfman Jack was fun, because we didn't have wolves. We thought that was fun. Those were the days. Okay, so we talked about some of these, you know, rags and all these different things. And down here they're talking about flashing lights. That you can't do any of that on really large areas, and you're not at liberty to do that on public land if you graze on public land, right?
Oh, you could, but it wouldn't do any good. I mean, you'd have to gather your cows up, and that's contrary to what we would want on management. So
yeah, I mean, you're looking at kind of messing up the way grazing is actually. Grazing,
exactly.
Grazing benefits the land if it's done properly, and
yeah.
This looks like we're going to bunch everybody up and you know, really utilize the land improperly.
That's correct.
So.
I sent you one last document, and it's called The Wolf Attack, and before we run completely out of time, it's something that the people ought to read. The guy that came to me in 96 had a 250-head of pregnant cows within 5 miles of town, on flat ground, no trees, or at rolling hills, the Zumwalt Prairie. And wolves came in and attacked that one night. There was no blood, there was no loss, and it was 1 month from calving. And you talk about expense and trauma and emotional loss. You can read about what Mac Berkmeyer and his family had to put up with, backwards calves, upside-down calves, twisted around calves, calves that were legs were back, and everything at that time. And it's another expense, another cost, both emotional and economic, that we haven't really talked about today, and what that wolf did in one night. So it's on your website. You've got it posted, called Wolf Attack, A Cowman's Worst Nightmare. And he wrote that himself, so that's worth looking at.
It was a good, I mean, it was a sad story, but it was, you know, well written. I would encourage people to read that too. In the last couple minutes here, what else would you share with people, especially folks that are not familiar with life in, say, areas where you live? You know, people who would live in a city and that sort of thing that have potentially supported the reintroduction of wolves.
There was a book written by Amy Lynn Eaton, and she wrote a book called Collared, and it was just about the politics and the facts as wolves first moved into Oregon. Might be really good for your research or your people, whether they're in town or not. But one of the comments she wrote was, the closer people live to wolves, the less likely they are to feel positive towards the species. And that's you know, she didn't come in with a preconceived notion. That's what she learned in studying people. And so these wolves are liked by people that don't have to live around them, and disliked by people that do. And that's a telling story to me. And like I said, we try to just keep getting the research to try to help producers know, learn about them. Knowledge is useful. But we also need to recognize that the people who are not dealing with them on a daily basis, really getting down and understanding what the impacts are to a whole community, not just ranchers, the whole community.
Well, it's a lot like, I mean, it's a lot like in the urban areas when we make stupid laws that turn felonies into misdemeanors, like they've done here in California with Prop 47. Then you have a huge increase in crime. People start realizing, well, hey, maybe this wasn't so good. It was nice to be benevolent, but you know, there's a huge cost.
There's a huge cost.
Two-legged or four-legged, predators are predators.
And the cost isn't distributed between those who want the wolves and those who are having to spend the time and the energy and the money on them.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Right. Well, thank you very much, John, for coming on. It's been quite enlightening.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
We really like to keep up with your research because so often this becomes an opinion topic, and it's good for people to get all the facts. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Alrighty. So, folks, I hope you send the show to your friends and family. Post it on Facebook. Join us on Twitter. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.